clerk will call the docket.
In re Stephen Roy Arnold, as the honor of Robert Stephen Holy, City of Howard, Treasurer and Stock Deputy Solicitor General, being the Superior Commonwealth of Virginia.
You may proceed.
Good morning, Chief Justice Lemons and Justices of the Supreme Court of Virginia. May it please the Court, my name is Virginia Bondurant, and I, along with Providence Napoleon of McGuire Woods, represent Ms. Arnold. If the Court would allow, I'd like to request a few minutes to respond to any argument the Commonwealth may have.
Would you like 2 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right.
The Commonwealth and Ms. Arnold agree on most of the factual and legal issues in this appeal. The only issue that still needs to be addressed is the remedy. Ms. Arnold's position is that this Court should reverse and remand for the trial court to enter final judgment and award her petition for name change. The Commonwealth's position is that this Court should reverse and remand for the trial court to further consider Ms. Arnold's application. Final judgment is appropriate in this case. Under Code Section 8.01.217, as enacted when Ms. Arnold filed her petition for appeal in July of 2013, and is recognized by this Court in Stevens v. Commonwealth, there are two elements that must be established when determining whether to grant an incarcerated person's petition for name change. First, there must be a finding of good cause. Second, there must be a finding that the name change is not for a fraudulent purpose and will not infringe on the rights of others. If both of these elements are met, then under 8.01-217, as enacted in 2013, the Court shall order the name change. Here, these two elements are met on the face of the record below, as acknowledged by the Commonwealth in its brief. Good cause is established because Ms. Arnold's name change is not for a frivolous purpose. Rather, she is seeking a name change because she is transitioning from a male to female gender. She is in treatment for gender identity disorder, and the use of the name Stephen causes her great distress, anxiety, and further exacerbates her gender identity disorder. The record below also demonstrates that there is no evidence that Ms. Arnold's name change is for a fraudulent purpose or will infringe on the rights of others. To the contrary, Ms. Arnold certified under oath that her name change is not for a fraudulent purpose and will not infringe on the rights of others, and that can be found.
Presumably, the Federal Bureau of Prisons actually agrees with her and is permitting this process to continue during the period of incarceration. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right.
Additionally, reversing and remanding to the trial court to further consider Ms. Arnold's application would be futile. With all due respect to the trial court, it is demonstrated in the Robert Floyd Brown case that remand for further consideration is futile. Brown's case, like this case, involved a transgendered federal prisoner seeking a name change as he was transitioning from a male to a female gender. This court, in an unpublished order on December 12, 2013, reversed and remanded the Brown case to the same trial court as this case with instructions to, quote, enter judgment in accordance with this court's holding in Stevens versus Commonwealth. However, the trial court again denied Mr. Brown's petition, this time on the basis that good cause, quote, that good cause does not exist because the petitioner's stated reasons for the name change do not outweigh the potential negative impact on the community, given that the name change reflects a shift in gender identity of a federal prisoner, the court declines the application.
Well, I think you might be aware that Mr. Brown has appealed that decision to this court as well, and it's being held pending the outcome of this case.
Yes, sir. I was aware that he filed his petition on July 28th of 2014. Yes, sir. Based on the record below, the Commonwealth's acknowledgement that the evidence below meets the statutory requirements of 8.01-217 as enacted in 2013 and the futileness of remanding for further consideration to the trial court, this court should reverse and remand to the trial court to enter final judgment awarding Ms. Arnold's petition for name change.
This may seem like getting to another issue quicker than you might expect, but it seems to me they're interrelated. There is a change to the statute that took place after Ms. Arnold filed her petition. And one of the questions before the court is she, upon remand, subject to the new statute or the old statute? Because both sides are asking for a remand. And I suspect you ought to have the opportunity to talk about this first. The Commonwealth, as amicus, may very well have their own views. The only thing I can see that's different about the two statutes, there's still good cause shown, but there's an addition to the statute. It says not the court shall order the name change, but the court may order the name change if it determines that. And there's three things. And two of them are in the first version of the statute, but one of them is not. Three things are it would not frustrate a legitimate law enforcement purpose, and that's new.
Yes, sir.
And the other two are simply brought forward from the old statute, that it is not sought for a fraudulent purpose and would not otherwise infringe upon the rights of others. I'm trying to figure out what that first statement means. Would not frustrate a legitimate law enforcement purpose. The Commonwealth says that all of this is procedural, but I'm concerned that it must be substantive, but what does it mean?
Yes, sir, and we would agree with Your Honor that it is a substantive change. It essentially requires an additional element that the petitioner must not only plead in his petition for a name change, but also prove. And
well, the new statute, for example, requires that if a person is on the sex offender registry, that they have to disclose that.
Yes, sir.
So it's not that, because it's obviously something that's required in the new statute. It's not sought for a fraudulent purpose, doesn't infringe upon the rights of others. What is it?
Your Honor, it's not defined within the statutory language, but it would appear that it would mean not interfere with a law enforcement, a police, power or something along that nature.
Well, it couldn't possibly be that you change your name, it's difficult to track you. That happens with regularity when people get married. It happens when people get adopted. It happens with some regularity in circumstances that are close to this, but not exactly like this. I guess I'm having trouble figuring out whether this is substantive or not substantive. It would appear on its face to be substantive, but I can't figure out what it is, and perhaps the Commonwealth will have an opportunity to answer that question as well.
Yes, sir, and we would still maintain that because it does require an additional element be pled and proven within the petition for name change, that it is a substantive amendment to the statute, not just a procedural amendment. Your Honor also acknowledged that, getting to the heart of the issue, that if this court remands for the trial court to further consider the application, that the court should apply the statute as enacted in 2013, not the newly revised statute. One of the reasons we just talked about was that it's a material change to the substantive rights. Two other reasons are, first, the fundamental principles of statutory construction establish that retroactive laws are not favored, and a statute should always be prospectively applied unless there is a manifest legislative intent. Here, there was no such manifest legislative intent that the statute be applied retroactively. Third reason is that a retroactive application of the facts in this case would be a manifest injustice. Changes in the law would require Ms. Arnold to essentially restart her petition process. She would have to refile a petition in order to meet the new standards and elements of 8.01-217 as enacted in 2014. She would basically have to refile her case. This is particularly unjust under the fact...
Your position then is no matter what we decide about whether it's a new substantive provision, your client brought a petition under the old statute. If it's remanded, it's still decided under the old statute.
Yes, sir.
No matter whether it's substantive or not.
That's correct.
All right.
And Your Honor, in fact, we would go one step further that this court could enter final, well, mandate that the trial court enter final judgment due to the evidence below establishing Ms. Arnold's petition on the face of the petition had sufficient evidence to establish all of the elements for an award of a name change as she filed it in July of 2013.
All right.
So we would ask the court to reverse and remand for final judgment, or alternatively to reverse and remand for the court to apply the 8.01-217 as enacted in 2013. Thank you, Your Honor.
You have 4 minutes and 27 seconds left.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, Trevor Cox on behalf of the Commonwealth as amicus curiae in this case. The Commonwealth agrees with Arnold that the lower court committed error in denying her application for lack of good cause without providing any evidence in the record. And the Stevens v. Commonwealth case from this court in 2007 controls. There, Justice Koontz wrote that to be a proper exercise of discretion under subsection A, that an application lacks good cause, the determination of this of the circuit court to that effect must be supported by evidence in the record.
To make this clear, you're not representing a party in this action. You're not representing the judge, for example. You're simply appearing as amicus in order to, if you will, protect the statute as the Attorney General believes it ought to be interpreted.
That's correct, but also we filed an amicus brief in this case to encourage this court to make clear that being transgender is not a good reason to deny a name change application. On the contrary, being transgender is good cause for a circuit court to accept a name change application and then grant it, absent one of the disqualifying factors in the statute that should apply equally to all applicants, regardless of the applicant's gender identity.
Well, of course, that isn't actually stated as a reason by the trial court, but I suspect that your position is that it's happened very frequently in this court, and that's the conclusion you reach.
That's correct. The reason given for good cause in the application by Ms. Arnold was that she was transgender. She suffers from gender identity dysphoria. The use of the name Stephen exacerbates that dysphoria. And for that reason, she wanted to legally change her name to avoid that clinically significant distress. So for her, it certainly wasn't a frivolous reason for seeking the name change application, and yet the lower court denied the application as if it were frivolous. There's no guidance that the courts have given about what constitutes good cause, but the court said in Stevens that an application could be denied for lack of good cause if it's frivolous. And if left standing, the lower court's decision would convey that being transgender is a frivolous reason for pursuing a name change application. And we believe that's wrong for three reasons. One, because of the clinically significant distress that Arnold herself has experienced. But moreover, the General Assembly has already implicitly recognized that name changes often accompany transsexuality. The provision of the code that allows for a transsexual to amend her birth certificate, it's 32.1-269E, says the transsexual can apply for that amendment in sex to be made on the birth certificate. And at the same time, if they've received a court order regarding a change of name, they can go ahead and submit that, and the name will be changed as well. So the General Assembly has already recognized that these things go hand in hand.
And so your position is that because the public policy of Virginia, at least to a certain extent, is already expressed in that statute, that being the underlying reason for the name change couldn't possibly be frivolous.
That's correct. And an additional reason, I think you could read this court's opinion in the, not its opinion, but it's the decision in the Robert Floyd Brown case that Ms. Bondurant mentioned as signaling that being transgender constitutes good cause. And let me explain why. In the Stevens case, this court recognized that the lower court had flubbed the first stage of the inquiry about whether good cause existed. And in Robert Floyd Brown, this court reversed and remanded summarily with instructions that the lower court enter judgment in accordance with Stevens. And so if it were to follow Stevens, it would have skipped the first part of the process and resumed its review under the analysis of 217C. So in Robert Floyd Brown, this court had a substantially identical situation, and this court said, you need to go back and follow Stevens. And in Stevens, they said, skip the first part of the process, good cause is met, you need to go ahead and just apply the statutory factors and see if any of those are disqualifying.
Not often that we have people who sit at these two tables that agree on so many different things. but having said that, let's move to what you don't agree on.
Sure.
Ms. Conrad actually presents two things, not one, two. One is that the statute itself has a substantive change in it, and we'll get back to that in just a second. And the other is that even if it isn't substantive, her petition predates the new statute, and if remanded, she should have the benefit of whatever that statute provides. On the first question, I must say, it looks like it's substantive to me, but I can't figure out what it is. Mm-hmm. So what is frustrate a legitimate law enforcement's purpose designated to consist of?
Well, it's not clear from the statute itself, obviously, but it does go hand in hand with some other revisions to the statute that relate to an inmate's responsibility, if applicable, to register on the sex offender registry. And I will note that there was an opinion from the Circuit Court of Lee County in 2004 that denied an inmate's application on good cause grounds because of fear that it would frustrate legitimate law enforcement purposes because of the inmate's transgender identity. And so what I think the statute is going after is that, as Your Honor suggested, that it might be difficult to track the person. I'm not saying that the Commonwealth, I'm not representing that that's what is meant by the statute, but reading it along with the other changes that were made to the statute, it seems to be aimed at making sure that that those who are required to register on the registry can be properly tracked. But in a way, it just sort of teases out the factors that are already there.
Well, the problem with that view is that it applies to people who aren't on the registry as well.
That would be correct on a strict reading.
Well, I'm trying to figure out in that case what legitimate law enforcement purpose is being frustrated. What does it mean? If people still change their names from time to time when they get married. Mm-hmm. Would the Commonwealth have standing to say, well, that just defeats and frustrates a legitimate law enforcement purpose? You can't do that. Would the Commonwealth say that with regard to an adoption? I don't understand what is meant by frustrate a legitimate law enforcement purpose in this statute.
To my knowledge, Your Honor, this will be the first case to address this under the revised statute. So there's unfortunately no case law to interpret it. But I think the case law would need to be developed based on what a legitimate law enforcement purpose is. I think the circuit court would have to justify that, and on appeal there would have to be a rational reason why the legitimate law enforcement disqualifying factor would apply.
Who has the burden?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Who has the burden of proof that it would not frustrate a legitimate law enforcement purpose? Is that on the petitioner, or is that burden of proof on the Commonwealth in this civil case?
Your Honor, I'm not sure about the answer to that.
It's important because if the record is silent, then it would default in favor of the petitioner. And surely the record is silent in this case.
It is silent on the record as it exists because it hasn't been developed by the circuit court. It never proceeded to this stage of review. And one of the issues with the relief that Arnold seeks here is in seeking final judgment by this court is that below it never proceeded to that level of review where a circuit court could gather evidence. Whether or not it's under the new statute or the old statute, the circuit court could certainly inquire into the application to determine whether or not it was for a fraudulent purpose or would infringe upon the rights of others, or under the new statute, whether it would frustrate legitimate law enforcement purposes.
Does the new statute make a substantive change in the law?
We don't believe so, Justice Mims. Substantive changes, substantive property rights, involve laws that create obligations and duties, and there's nothing here that forces Arnold to forfeit property, obliges her to do anything. And furthermore, because the lower court never proceeded to that stage of the process, the law of the proceeding is the law that's on the books at the time of the proceeding. So it's certainly not a vested right either that Arnold would have in a name change. There's a vested right is one that is not dependent on any future act or contingency to make that right more secure. Here, there's no right that was ever obtained. And so we believe that this is more in the line of a procedural remedy to enforce a right rather than a substantive right itself. And Code 801-1 makes clear that generally changes in law apply retroactively to causes of action that existed before the change in law, unless it's a substantive vested right or if it would cause a miscarriage of justice. And we simply don't believe that.
Has he answered your question?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Bonneron, rebuttal? You have 4 minutes and 25 seconds.
Briefly, Your Honor. And under the first statute, the 8.01-217, as enacted in 2013, the court could consider the petition and the petition alone. No hearing was required. So the burden of proof at that stage would be upon the petitioner to not only establish in his petition all of the elements required, but the petition itself could be the only evidence the court had to grant or deny the petition, just like this case. So the burden is on the petitioner to establish all of the requisite elements, not only in its petition, but then if an evidentiary hearing is had on the petition as well. While this is, Mr. Cox did recognize that this is the first case in Virginia dealing with the new element of...
That position actually has two edges on the sword. On the one hand, if you think it's a substantive matter that the burden is on the petitioner, a silent record would not help you. But in this limited case, it probably weighs heavily in favor of your view that on remand, it ought not to be applied to your client.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But it applied to all the other people out there.
Well, all of the other people that applied for a petition for name change once the new law went into effect.
All right.
And as far as what the court may consider as far as what a legitimate law enforcement purpose would be or frustrate a legitimate law enforcement purpose. While we're not sure from the words on the statute what the General Assembly may have meant by that, I would direct the court to Barrett versus Virginia. While not a controlling case, is a Fourth Circuit case in which the Fourth Circuit held that it's not a legitimate concern to prevent a prisoner from changing his name because the prison would have difficulty tracking that prisoner within its own systems because the prison is very accustomed to having a prisoner with various aliases, and there's no problem as far as the prisoner or the prison tracking the prisoner through his given name or the various aliases that the prisoner was using. So I would just point the court to that case as well. Thank you very much for your time. We do ask for reverse and remand for final judgment.
All right, Ms. Bondurant, thank you and your co-counsel and your firm for bearing the responsibility of representing Ms. Arnold, who otherwise would not have access to the court. It's the highest tradition of the bar.
Thank you, Your Honor. It was a pleasure.
Clerk will call the next case.